This is Clinical Conversations. I'm Joe Elia. An essay in the June edition of Health Affairs caught my attention last week. It's about the connections that clinical medicine can make with the wider world. The essay looks at a man with low back pain and recent weight gain and connects that to Joni Mitchell, the New York Yankees, and a potted history of the Bronx. I'll let the essayist explain. Cameron Page is a hospitalist and a clinical instructor in medicine at Beth Israel Medical Center in New York City. Welcome, Dr. Page.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about the guy you call by his initial, which is P, his low back pain, weight gain, the Yankees, Joni Mitchell. What's it all about?
Yeah. Well, I should say that the Joni Mitchell part was added by the editors of the magazine afterwards. As you probably know, I just write the essay, and then the title is chosen by the editors. Yeah. But the patient himself was a guy who came into me to see me. Just he had, you know, gained a lot of weight, and was saying his back was hurting. And I kind of started probing, you know, just saying, well, what's going on? Changes in your life? I was thinking maybe he was getting depressed and was eating more as a result of that, and trying, you know, just kind of digging around, trying to figure out how I could help him. And it turned out that he had lost the place where he played soccer, which was this big open grassy field next to Yankee Stadium. And, you know, he just had suddenly he'd gained 40 pounds and was having back problems. It just struck me as such a classic case of the way that the environment around us affects our health, you know. And usually it's very subtle, but this was such a clear, stark example of it.
Yeah. So the Yankees were building their new stadium, and they were filling his old soccer field with rubble, so he couldn't play there.
Exactly. So they built a new stadium basically right next to the old stadium, and then they tore down the old stadium, and eventually they put in a park there. But there was about 3 years where, you know, there were two stadiums right next to each other, and there was just no free space left.
But they did on the parking lot for on the new parking lot that they built. They have an AstroTurf roof where kids play soccer now. Is that right?
It's interesting. There was a change. I mean, it used to be that field next to Yankee Stadium had just been a big kind of plot of grass.
Uh-huh.
And it was completely unstructured space, and people, kind of the local residents, used it the way they wanted.
Yeah.
When the city came in and built the new park, it was very structured space.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, there was room for exercise. In fact, they designed it for exercise.
Uh-huh.
But they designed it for specific structured exercise. So, you know, there are soccer games now in that space, but they're like league soccer games, and you have to have a team and register and sign up. And there's, you know, courts and baseball diamonds, but they're all kind of official spaces. There was no space left for kind of casual, informal sporting.
See, we in Boston would never do such a thing. The Red Sox would never be party to such a travesty.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Park, one of the only stadiums that's still up.
Yeah, and it's, of course, surrounded by nothing but asphalt and well, you know, old buildings and things like that. So,
well, that's right,
It's 100 years old, and no one plays soccer anywhere near it.
Right,
you know,
it's
a pretty straight line from a paved-over soccer field to overweight and low back pain, and you expanded out a bit beyond that connection to talking about the Bronx, urban density, the importance of the local availability of parks for exercise. Where did you get that perspective? As I was looking into your background, I think I see that you studied political science at Georgetown. Is that right?
Huh. That's right. Good research. Yeah. That's originally I thought I wanted to grow up and be president, and then medicine was really just a backup plan when I realized that that was not at all what I wanted to do. I actually started at Georgetown the year that Bill Clinton became president.
Uh-huh.
So I was in the class of political science geeks who are among the most dedicated out there, and I think I just couldn't cut it compared to that gang. But it did give me a certain grounding in what, you know, just the way that government policy can really actually deeply affect people's lives, and the importance of it.
I just, as I was reading the essay, I wasn't really that fascinated with the Yankees or the Bronx or anything else, but it seemed that you had had this sort of, you know, flash of insight that medicine really wasn't, and you knew this before you went into medicine anyway, but it really wasn't all about LDL levels and, you know, what regimen to put somebody with, you know, heart failure on. But it was really connecting medicine, clinical medicine, out beyond the clinic walls. And it was, it seemed that you have this insight.
Well, I think it's a realization that a lot of us have somewhere in medical school or residency. You know, I mean, a lot of us chose to become doctors. We got excited about being doctors when we were younger. And for me, anyway, there was this notion that, well, doctors can just heal people. There's a magic to it. And this idea that maybe that, you know, once you learn to become a doctor, there's a magic wand. And, of course, you realize as you go through the process that there isn't a magic wand. And we have some medicines that are good, and there's surgeries that help people. But really, there isn't, you know, there are a lot of things that we just cannot help people with. There's a lot of diseases that we can't do anything about.
Yeah.
And that really the way to keep people healthy is things like, you know, making sure that they're exercising, they're staying at a healthy weight, they're eating appropriately. And those are things that you can't write a prescription for.
Yeah.
And so that's, you know, it's a really frustrating thing sometimes to have that, but it's one of the reasons why we have to think outside the exam room, why physicians have to be kind of active in the community, because, you know, it's just not enough to be able to write a prescription.
Right. Well, tell me a little bit about your writing. Is it a regular practice of yours, or I think I read that you had done some playwriting. Is that right?
Yeah, that's my other. That's the real kind of hobby.
Uh-huh.
I was kind of interested in theater, and I was a political science major and a theater major in college, and you know, kind of dabbled with, you know, after I decided I didn't want to be president, I thought, well, maybe I'll be a movie star instead. And that plan also didn't work out so well. So really medicine is my third choice career.
Uh-huh.
And you know, of course, acting is something that you can't do, you know, just in your free time, but you can do some writing in your free time, and that's kind of what I ended up doing. I write a few plays. There's a group here in New York that sometimes performs, you know, short plays that I write. Honestly, being a doctor is a great source of dramatic material.
I mean,
you know, I have other friends who are writers who their day job is, you know, sitting collating files, and there's not a lot of inherent drama in that. But, you know, I wake up and go to work every day, and there's questions of life and death and loss and all of this. So, those are, you know, what I write essays that are more policy focused, like this one was. But then, you know, it's great when I get a chance to kind of incorporate some of the drama of my day to day life into some plays.
Well, Chekhov was a playwright and a doctor.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right.
And also,
you can see it.
Yeah.
Well, I heard that Carlos Williams, the poet, also was a
He was a doctor. Right. And of course, Lewis Thomas, who wrote Notes of a Biology Watcher. I don't know whether you know him.
I've heard the name.
He was a professor of, I believe, medicine. I'm probably wrong. At Yale, and he wrote a series of essays in the New England Journal of Medicine, of all places.
Interesting.
Called Notes of a Biology Watcher, which I saw the first of with, you know, a long time ago. The editor handed me this and said, "Ilya, what do you think of this essay?" And I said, "Well, it's the best thing I've read in, you know, years anywhere." And he said, "Good, he's going to write a column for us." So that was Lewis Thomas.
Great.
I'd urge you to look him up.
I will. You know, Yale has a real strong tradition of writing there. That's where I went.
Right.
Medical school.
Right.
Richard Seltzer is also.
That's right.
Who's kind of a prominent medical writer.
I hired Richard Seltzer a long time ago to write essays for a little magazine that we did called Massachusetts Medicine. And back in days, he said, I said, "So what do you want?" He said, "I want a dollar a word," which was like, you know, a lot of money. And I said, "Damn it." I said, "Okay, I'll get you the money." He said, "All right, but I want to be able to write about anything I want." And I said, go ahead. But he was, he was good. I don't know. Is he still writing?
I don't know. He, well, see, when I was there, and this was 2003, 2004, he was actually very involved with the medical students. And there was a writing group that he would kind of curate. You know, people could submit. I mean, it's a great, amazing opportunity. You know, you submit some of your writing and get it critiqued by Richard Seltzer. And he was, at the time, I don't think he was still, I don't know if he was still publishing stuff. He's, he was kind of famous for just popping up in the library. He had a very strict schedule, and every day you would see him at the, I think it's, it was the main, I can't remember the name of the library now, but he had the same desk and the same spot, and he would be there for, you know, 3 or 4 hours every day.
Yeah, he was.
But I think
he was jealous of Lewis Thomas. He told me once. He said, "I wish I had written those essays."
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. You know, he said that before. He said that. That's absolutely true.
Is that right?
Because the highest compliment that he would give you, you know, if you were a student and you submitted your writing, the highest compliment he would give is, you know, "I really wish I had written this."
Well,
and that was when you knew that he really liked it.
Let's get back to your writing for a sec.
Sure.
You know, I found this in the journal Health Affairs, which I think is not a notable literary outlet. I will have to. Mm-hmm. I will say that. And so I wondered, you know, why did you write there and not to say the Bellevue Literary Review, which is really a great little journal published in your neighborhood.
That's interesting.
Well,
there were two ways to go with it. You know, in some ways, it was a story. And there's a certain, you know, drama to it, and the sadness of just the guy trying to stay healthy and the way the environmental forces around him affect his health.
Yeah.
But there was also just a policy component. I mean,
right. It
really, and I could have just left it with the story of the man, but I really wanted to connect it up to the policies and the way that, you know, that we need to be thinking about how our cities are built and that focus on green space. And that was what the Health Affairs did for me, because of course when they read it, they were like, we like the story of the patient, but you know, this is a Health Affairs is a prominent health policy journal, so they say, if we're going to publish this, we want it to be rooted in policy. And actually, the stuff that they asked me to add, they had me go back and do some research on, well, what does the data show on parks and people's proximity to parks?
Really?
And that was when I kind of did a little more work. They made the essay better for sure by getting a little more data in there, not just my story. I looked at a bunch of journal articles on what it shows, because one of the criticisms the reviewer said is, well, you know, so he lost the park next to Yankee Stadium, but there's, you know, Central Park is massive and it's only a few subway stops away.
Yeah.
Which I thought, well, then that's true. But if you look at the literature, it turns out that parks that are more than a mile from where you live are effectively, you know, useless. People don't really change their behavior for a park that's more than a mile away.
Right. And
people
who
live near a park, they will, you know, use it. Other than that, they won't.
Yeah, and besides, the critic forgot that to get onto the subway, you have to pay.
Yeah, of course, right.
You know,
these
little
details like that.
Right. Doesn't everyone have a subway card? No. I think Health Affairs is actually I've started reading it regularly, and I think it's, you know, I would have to say it's one of the most improved journals over the past generation that I've seen. It's really good, and they're starting to sort of edge into some clinical stuff, and you know, with what the Supreme Court is. I almost said the Supremes. What they're ruling this week or perhaps next week is really going to make a journal like that more important. But
there's so much going on right now in that whole area.
Right. There certainly is. I want to thank you, Dr. Page, for spending time with me today. I'm going to let you get back to seeing people that you can help.
Well, thank you. This is really great to talk to you.
All right. That was our 157th edition, and all the earlier ones may be found at podcasts.jwatch.org. We come to you from Journal Watch, whose website is jwatch.org. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Ador Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Dr. Danielle Schurer and I thank you for listening.